You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
My working title for this address was All the World is Mad Save Thee and Me, and Even Thou Art a Little Mad. This is a remark my dad used to make at the end of long conversations about putting the world to rights. It comes to my mind quite often when hearing people talk about current affairs or education, politics, policing, whatever. The guy who coined it was Robert Owen. The quote originally read, "All the world is queer, save thee and me, and even thou art a little queer." In 1820, the word queer did not carry any connotations of gender identity or preference. Now, what made Robert Owen feel that he was a being apart from most others? Well, he thought that 8 hours' work was enough for one day. He believed religion, marriage, and private property were the source of the evils of society. He worried that industrialization was widening the gap between the haves and have-nots. He wanted people to be free and equal, pretty way out for 1824. He worked in the cotton industry in Manchester before setting up a large mill at New Lanark in Scotland. He invested the bulk of his fortune in an experimental utopian 1,000-member colony on the banks of Indiana's Wabash River called New Harmony. Well, New Harmony didn't last much longer than most utopian efforts, about 2 years. But he wasn't an ineffectual utopian. Owen and his acolytes helped to bring lasting social reforms in women's and workers' rights, establish free libraries and museums, childcare, public co-ed schools, cooperatives and trade unions. He wasn't Unitarian. Apart from his claim all religions are false, which I don't suppose we'd have a lot of trouble with, there's another twist that makes me want to tell him, "Robert, all the world is queer, save thee and me, and even thou art a little queer." In 1854, which is the same year as our church began, isn't it? Owen converted to spiritualism after a series of sittings with one Maria B. Hayden, an American medium credited with introducing spiritualism to England. He made a public profession of his new faith in the Rational Quarterly Review and in a pamphlet entitled The Future of the Human Race, or Great, Glorious and Future Revolution, is to be effected through the agency of departed spirits of good and superior men and women. Now, I'm not sure how you stand with the notion of our future being dependent on the departed spirits of good and superior men and women. Well, actually, I lie. I can almost see a collective thought bubble floating in the ether above your heads, and it reads, "Bullshit." Now, that brings to mind Barbara Oakley's Book of the Month. She's an engineer and professor at the Oakland University in Michigan. The book is called Calling Bullshit, The Art of Skepticism in a Data-Driven World, by Carl T. Bergstrom and Jevon D. West. It describes how easy it is for journalists, politicians, companies, and even researchers to fool people. The authors cite engineer Brandolini's principle, coined in 2014. The amount of energy needed to refute bullshit is an order of magnitude bigger than that needed to produce it. Producing it is a lot less work than cleaning it up. It's a lot simpler and cheaper to do. Any idiot can create more bullshit than you could ever hope to refute. Our reading today touched on the current concern about the spread of misinformation. There's a lot of it about. It's exacerbated by the COVID-19 response, because people are spending too much time on their IT toys, being fed information they've already shown a predilection for. Hence, phenomena like QAnon, which was referred to in our reading today. That far-right conspiracy theory alleges that a cabal of Satan-worshipping pedophiles are running a global child sex trafficking ring, and that's plotting against President Trump, and he is battling them. Now, no part of the theory is based in fact, but its growing popularity raises the probability of Trump being re-elected in America. And in Australia, this sort of stuff promotes non-compliance with COVID-19 restrictions. It boosts the number of climate change deniers, and it ramps up fear and distrust of reputable sources of information. Now, the ACCC want to make moves on companies like Facebook, which not only allows QAnon posts, but also promulgates falsehoods like the World Health Organization no longer supports social distancing. I'm not going to get into a discussion about free speech, but rather explore two themes. One is contagion, and the other is what to do about it. Adam Kucharski is an associate professor at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. In his book, The Rules of Contagion, published this year, he examines why things spread and why they stop. He doesn't stay within his field of epidemiology, because it turns out the maths is much the same for diseases, ideas, economic trends. He worked on the Ebola epidemic, the Zika virus, and he's won awards for talking and writing. Now, we know ideas are contagious. Isaac Newton was famously one of the biggest losers in the South Sea bubble. In fact, that's where the word bubble comes from to refer to overinflated investments. And there have been many bubbles since Newton's. Newton invested in the British South Sea Company in 1719. It wasn't the most ethical investment. They had contracts with the slavers in the Americas. He sold most of his shares after making a profit in spring, but reinvested in summer because the share price was still shooting to the sky. Then it plummeted and he lost £20,000, which is about £20 million in today's money. No wonder he remarked, "I can calculate the motion of heavenly bodies, but not the madness of people." Other people did better. Bookseller Thomas Guy made a killing and set up Guy's Hospital in London. But how do mathematicians show how contagion works? Well, let's look at an example of the work from epidemiologist Sunitra Gupta. He looked at the dynamics of disease transmission and distinguished between assortative and non-assortative networks. In the assortative networks, highly connected people are connected with other highly connected people through clusters of high-risk individuals, but they struggle to reach the less connected parts of the network. The result is an outbreak that spreads quickly. By contrast, in a disassortative network, high-risk people are mostly linked to low-risk ones. This makes the infection spread slowly at first, but it leads to a larger overall epidemic. Remember the global financial crisis of 2008? The banking network turned out to be a disassortative network, so Lehman Brothers could spread contagion widely, and when it failed, over 1 million counterparties, we were all in a spot of bother. We live in a world with huge numbers of unqualified people publishing opinions, reports, and so-called research findings. Rather than pay for information, people instinctively seek out information on free platforms. BuzzFeed's Craig Silverman showed that the fake news articles outperformed real news in the month leading up to the 2016 election in the USA. Facebook algorithm amplifies trending news, whether it's real or fake. Now, in a spirit of mischief, let's try a little game to see how good we are at spotting fake news. Well, fake headlines, we haven't got all day. I have 6 slides here. Each contain 2 fake and 1 real headline. And I'll give you about half a minute to decide which of the 3 is true. Feel free to turn around and consult those sitting nearby. But don't put your heads together. We're still socially distancing. thumbs up means real, thumbs down means fake. How public you are with your thumbs up and thumbs down is up to you. So, Slovak pensioner opens stuffed animal zoo. Japanese say Godzilla is too fat. World's first hot dog ATM opens in Malaysia. Right, well, the one that was untrue was the last one. Now, here we go. Scientists create a plant that cannot die. Scientists to create stem cell burger. Scientists create water-activated self-folding straws. Now, the winner is, the one that's true, is scientists create a plant that cannot die. Now, if you're not doing well, don't feel bad. I only got half of these right. Here's the next one. Trump claimed climate change was a hoax created by China. Trump campaign offered actors $50 to cheer for presidential announcement. Trump Twitter fight with former wrestler Hulk Hogan. Well, that's the one I picked to be true, that the Hulk Hogan one, because I knew he had a bit of a... But actually, the one that was true was the Trump campaign offered actors $50. Well done. Okay, spot the fake headline. Flood of caramel unleashed by Brazilian sugar fire. Sea monster washes ashore in New Zealand. Weatherman trapped by avalanche mid-report. Well, the fake one there is weatherman trapped by avalanche mid-report. That's the fake. I got this one right. North Korean cats rounded up and sent south. Kim Jong-un throws dance parties to celebrate North Korea missile launch. Australian imposters play official golf tournament in North Korea. Well, the fake one is about the North Korean cats. And this is the very last one. Crocodile breaks loose on Qantas flight. Wombat grounds flight in Sydney. Skippy causes plane crash. The first one's the wrong one. I got that one after getting the previous two wrong. It was actually quite demoralising. Kirsty Hess, senior lecturer in communication at Deakin University, argues that as readers, we're becoming increasingly aware of the proliferation of fake news, and we will increasingly seek to verify the facts. However, what she thinks is that traditional media need to change their act, so they use Facebook as a promotional tool to direct readers to their websites instead of driving them to actually consume the news on Facebook. So far, so good. But what do we do when our nearest and dearest, or our children, parents, friends in our inner circle, start to spout toxic nonsense? A little story from the pre-internet age. As those of you who've experienced life in the city and life in the country know, whatever the virtues of country life are, country people do not experience the same diversity. A friend of mine, on family visits, started to get agitated when her sisters and friends began to criticise newcomers to the district for being slack about learning English and meeting up to jabber away in their Filipino language every fortnight. Local farmers were acquiring Filipino brides, and the brides were not fitting in, a crime in the country. My friend knew she could not call her sister a racist. Eventually, she worked out what to say, and it was this. "But what if you went to the Philippines?" "Fat chance," said her sister. "All right, scrap that. Just imagine you went to Germany or France somewhere, and it was a big effort for you to trot out your schoolgirl French or German. And then once a week you had a chance to meet up with some other Australian wives and talk English at a coffee shop. Wouldn't you go for it?" Her sister conceded that indeed she would, and there was an abrupt change of subject. However, my friend didn't hear any more complaints about new wives not fitting in, and in the months that followed, Filipino women were being asked to go on canteen duty at the high school or swimming pool roster, and various other activities where fluent English wasn't essential, but there was an opportunity to get to know each other. Appealing to the imagination and commonality of experience is one way of redirecting people when your bonds are strong, but you're less likely to be able to do this with friends and acquaintances. Now, one of my acquaintances has issues with English and post-traumatic stress disorder. She falls for all the current nonsense about Bill Gates being the source of all evil, nanoparticles being popped into anti-COVID vaccines, the government monitoring your every move. It's extraordinary. When she was young, she was a lefty, and she'd still consider herself to be anti-fascist. Now, the friend that's closer to her finds this not only exasperating because it's silly, but upsetting because the woman who's subject to all this nonsense is filled with doom and gloom about it. Conspiracy theories are not good for mental health. Flat contradiction is not an option. My friend is dealing with it by listening a lot without interrupting. And then she puts questions in like, do you know who published that? Well, which web source was that? And comments like, oh, that sounds interesting. Oh, that's a bit of a worry. I'm going to check that out. And this opens the door to sending a link to a reputable news source, scientific institution, or in fact, checking site. These often let you know the cyclical history of particular hoaxes or stories. Remember when the AIDS crisis emerged, the Grim Reaper ads? Journalist Randy Schiltz published a book called And the Band Played On. He identified patient zero as a super spreader who was responsible for the outbreak of AIDS in California. Well, Gaitan Dugas was blonde, charming, a flight attendant who had an awful lot of sex, and he died of AIDS at 31 in 1984. But this turned out to be fiction, but it took until 2016 for researchers to find out and publish the fact that AIDS had started 15 years before. Dugas had been just another case in a widespread epidemic. The O stood for outside California, not zero. It was Schiltz's editor who persuaded him to portray the Canadian as the man who gave us AIDS. That was a New York Post headline. The National Review dubbed him the Columbus of AIDS. The motivation was that the readership would be boosted by having a clear villain. And a one-villain explanation would not offend publishers unwilling to criticise the Reagan administration or the medical establishment. People as erudite as Malcolm Gladwell in The Tipping Point also got things badly wrong. He described a gonorrhea outbreak in Colorado Springs, and I'm going to read you a few lines of what he wrote because I believe this sort of language is a giveaway of bias and lack of reflection. Out of 769 cases, he reports, interviewed by an epidemiologist, 168 had at least two contacts who were also infected, and Gladwell goes in for the kill. Who were those 168 people? They are not like you and me. They are people who go out every night, people who have vastly more sexual partners than the norm, people whose lives and behaviour are well outside the ordinary. Barbara Oakley, the engineer and educator I mentioned earlier, moved every year or two during her most formative years because her father was in the Air Force. There's a documentary called Air Force Brats about this. Ultimately, she grew comfortable with the discomfort of never being quite like her classmates. When she moved from rural Texas to Malibu, for example, she didn't look right, wore the wrong jeans, didn't sound right, spoke with a thick Texas twang, and ultimately, she didn't think right, at least according to the ruling cliques of middle school. Today, Barbara is sometimes surprised by how people will reach judgments by appealing not to facts, but to the idea, why everybody, or at least all the right people, think that way. We often develop opinions based on where we stand in the world, our background, our life experiences. We must try as a society to listen to alternative views and to be open-minded when forming opinions. We need to vaccinate ourselves against tribal allegiances as well as fake news. Now, here's a little diagram originally designed to show the difference in transmission between when no one is vaccinated and when 4/5 of the population have been vaccinated. The vaccination I have in mind is to apply the guidelines of critical literacy to the stories we see or hear and not to pass them on unchecked. The first thing is to find out about the source. Where's the story come from? Look for blurry images, spelling errors, poor expression, exaggerated language like Gladwell used. Look at the About Us section. There should be a clear outline of the organisation and its history. The next thing is to check out the author. Has he written anything else? What outlets has he written for? If you can't find anything else or the websites look dodgy, you think twice. We check the story has references and links to other news stories and articles and authors, and then you actually click on the links, because it's pretty obvious if you're suddenly connected with a far-right site or Kim Kardashian or something like that. And really, this is for the tech-savvy, do a Google reverse image search. Upload a picture onto Google reverse image and you'll see all the other websites with similar images. You can see them where they've been used and if they've been used out of context. You know MediaWatch? That's how they find out that this photograph was taken 2 years before and it isn't in New South Wales, it's in Blar and it's, you know, all that sort of stuff. That's how the Children Overboard stuff got discredited. It was by that reverse image search checking. Another thing to ask is the story you're reading about being shared on mainstream news outlets like the BBC or the ABC? These outlets do take special care to have backup sources. They can occasionally make errors, so discussing the likelihood of a story being real or fake with a friend or family is absolutely always a good idea. Now, in the end, though, what saves our bacon is not only our brains. We need hearts as well. There's no point in being right or canny or savvy if we cannot also influence others. We need to make common sense contagious. We need to catch ourselves out so we don't patronise from a great height. We need to understand the point of view of others. The monk Thich Nhat Hanh gave as an example people who were pirates. He conceded that rape and theft were very bad acts, but denied that the pirates, as he called them, were inherently evil. Piracy was how coastal families in poverty-stricken lands made their living. In order for them to change, they needed to be afforded legitimate means of survival, not threatened with eternal damnation. Contempt does not produce a change of heart. So we end up really with several of our principles, don't we? If we want to live in a better world, we should recognise we should pursue a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. We should work for justice, equity and compassion in human relations. And above all, recognise the inherent worth and dignity of every person.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.